If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home. When I'm Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Powerslam podcast here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always by my mentor, my good, long, close, personal friend, Finn Martin. Finn, how are you today on this lovely Wednesday afternoon?
I'm not bad, Kenny. Not bad at all. I mean, I can't complain. How about yourself?
I'm not bad. The sun is shining outside. It's summer. We're allowed to get out of the house again a little bit. You know, it's you're allowed to go to the pub. If you want to have a little beer, you know, life is good.
It is. I went to the pub on Saturday night, sat outside at first, and then it was a bit chilly, so we went inside, felt totally safe. Then went to another pub and sat inside, and yeah, it was really good.
I've got to give props to a lot of the pubs for really working fast to make this work.
Oh, yes, I couldn't agree more. I thought staff were tremendous. I think that online, you know, you order your drink on the phone, through the app or whatever. And it's just like, I think, you know, you've got the table service like on the continent, you know, in Europe. And it's kind of like that. And it feels very civilized, Kenny. Very civilized indeed.
And you know that we like being civilized. That's one of our favorite things, is to feel civilized. And also, you know, getting to, I mean, I do have to laugh. Last night I was out for a friend's birthday. And we went to a pub in Glasgow. It was outside. And we're sitting outside and they had this kind of, you know, the pay, you know, order your drinks online and pay for them.
Yes.
But they had this, like, they didn't have an app. They had, like, Sage Pay, and the thing just didn't work at all. So you had to call a member of staff over to order your drinks. And then this poor girl who was, like, very clearly had just started and was expecting that all the orders would go through on an app. So all she would really need to do is, you know, take drinks out to people. And she felt very nervous that she had to take an order. And, you know, I almost wanted to go, it's going to be okay. You're going to get through this. It's just a vodka Diet Coke. There's nothing to be scared of here. He just wants a Moretti. We are okay. And then she was bringing out one drink and smashed a glass. I just don't think she's in the profession that she wants to be in. I didn't feel like she was in it for the love of what
That's only when you're nervous and you're self-conscious. That's when accidents happen.
Luckily, we had a picture of confidence here on the Power Slam podcast every single
week. You never cocked anything up on this podcast.
And nope, we never will. but there is lots of wrestling news going on.
Hey, what about the big news of my debut last week on the Pod of Thunder? That's the biggest news.
I listened to it over on Patreon, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes, where Finn went back to review Uncensored 1999 from WCW. So I've listened to the podcast. I can't say that podcast has made me want to watch Uncensored, but I thoroughly enjoyed you guys talking about it.
Yeah, please check it out, everyone. We had a riot, so you know they made me feel very welcome. So
it was great fun. And Finn's even going to come back later in the year for Halloween Havoc 99, for which you were in attendance in person.
I was in Las Vegas at the MGM Grand Garden Arena. Yes,
so first Russo pay-per-view.
First Vince Russo and Ed Ferrara pay-per-view. Yes, never forget that one. So, but yes, back to 2020, Kenny.
Back to 2020. Listen, we were talking about this off-air, and you know, next week, by the time we podcast, we should know the earnings for WWE for the quarter. And there'll probably be a lot of stuff like that we can have a conversation about and da-da-da. But I did want to read you a quote from AEW World Champion Jon Moxley. And I just... You know, what do you think of this? He was being asked about promos, you know, and doing scripted promos. So here's just two things he said about doing scripted promos in WWE. I thought I'd get your take on the comments. So here's what he says about how scripted promos drove him crazy. He said, if I had to boil it down to one thing that drove me crazier than anything was the fact that I got handed a script. Even in developmental, I heard the phrase scripted promo. I always thought it was a turn of phrase. I didn't realize this is how naive I was. They actually script your lines like a TV show. That blew my mind. First time they handed us a script, I thought it was like a suggestion, like they were kind of filling in words on the run sheet. And I'm like, I've got some cool ideas. We can say this or that. We can go this new gimmick we're doing. And the writer's like, oh, no, this is what you're going to say. And I remember having this feeling in the pit of my stomach, like, oh, my God, I've made a terrible mistake. And then he was asked more about, you know, pressure of a scripted promo. And he said, I'll tell you what pressure is. Pressure is having a 2-page script written by a 74-year-old madman that makes no sense to you. It's going to make you look stupid, and you're on worldwide TV live, and you've got to memorize every single line and somehow try to pull it off and not look like a total jackass. That's pressure. And a lot of times I did pull that off. A lot of times I didn't, but I'll never have to be in that situation again. Now I get to be me. It's a nice feeling. And I thought that was just an interesting quote to come out around the time that we're in right now, where, you know, the ratings came out for Raw and it was, I mean, you've got the numbers, Finn, more than I do, but, you know, very low numbers. There seems to be, you know, not the product is not hitting for people right now. And you've got kind of Moxley, who was there before, talking about how sort of rigid and scripted it is. I've got to wonder, you know, it feels like we're on the precipice of something happening soon. You know, something's got to give in some way.
Yes, I agree. I mean, he's right. I mean, I think it was last week or the week before, Seth Rollins came out and he used the word obtuse in a promo. Obtuse. I'm sure it was Seth Rollins who said it on Raw.
But you know that's not a word he would use in his life ever.
Exactly. It's just like, why would a wrestler in a promo use that word? You know, it's just not going to happen, is it? I mean, he's not appearing on the Power Slam podcast. I mean, we use words like that all the time on this podcast. We use long words. Oh, but in all seriousness, and I, you know, it was just like, why has he just said that word? And he said it in a way as if to make everyone realize that he was reading from a script. It was just so not what Seth Rollins would say. And this goes back years now. People have been complaining about these scripted promos for so long. And it's like, well, the promo needs to be a reflection of that person and that person's personality. And it's got to be different to everyone else's personality. Otherwise, that's going to be an impediment to that person getting over. You know, it's like, you know, you go back to Rock and Steve Austin. I mean, I don't mean to go back 20 years, but they're the ones that immediately leap to mind. And you know those guys. Okay, they had people that they might have worked with on the promos, but everything they said was individual, unique to them, wasn't it? It was tailored to their character. You know, they would say things that their character would say. I mean, they wouldn't use the word obtuse. They just wouldn't.
Even if you go back a couple of years before that, and the reason we're going so far back is because this is the last time that people were allowed to do this, is that even if you look at Bret Hart, who was thought of never in his career as a good promo, ever. And then in 1997, he had this summer where he was cutting these really good promos. And, you know, I'm sure there was bullet points to what he was saying, but he wasn't scripted to say, you know, when you were listening to Bret Hart talk about, you know, how he felt about America or how he felt about Shawn Michaels or Austin, it was like, you could tell there was parts of that was how he really felt and he dialed it up for TV. And that's kind of what, for me anyway, as a fan, has always made me gravitate to someone, is feeling like I'm kind of hearing what they've got to say, even if it's through a character lens.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is, it's like you need that freedom, I think. I understand if you're just starting out, then you will, you know, you're probably going to need some assistance, and appearing on live TV at the beginning must be very intimidating. You know, doing a promo, as we've seen with certain people, such as, I don't mean to pick on Natalia, but hey, she's not on TV at the moment. So, I mean, I don't have any other chance to knock her. But no, seriously, I mean, when Natalia does a promo, you can tell that she spent a long time memorizing that. And it's like it's over-rehearsed. And it doesn't feel like her anyway, but you know that she's over-rehearsed it to the point where she wants to do a good promo, but promos really aren't her thing. So she's over-rehearsed this promo to the point where it sounds over-rehearsed. And like we were talking, was it 2 weeks ago when Ric Flair was having that interaction with the Big Show?
And he said what he thinks about all the big guys, Brody and Andre. What he thinks, skill.
Rick's really struggling to remember his lines. You've given Ric Flair a script. Now, I know Rick's not the promo guy that he once was. And there have been many times, actually, when he's gone out there, certainly when he was in TNA, he was going out there and he was not making any sense at all. And there were some promos when he during his TNA run which were just disasters. There really were. But it's like with Ric Flair, you've got to allow Ric Flair to use some Ric Flair stuff in there. You know, it can't be all scripted for him like this was. And it was just such a struggle. It just felt so artificial. And it's like, it's pro wrestling, you know, it's not supposed to be real. But when we're watching any TV program that we like, we don't want to think, oh, that sounded scripted. Or watching a film and trying to suspend our disbelief. We want to feel that that character is saying things that he or she would say. I mean, this is the way it's always been, isn't it? You know, and it's like, if you're overly scripting everything and it's the same people scripting it for people, same people scripting it for the talent, and you know, each promo's kind of not really tailored to each character, then how's that character supposed to stand out? I mean, this is not a new problem. You know, this has been going on for a very long time, and I don't see an end to it in sight, and that is a real shame. You know, it's a real shame because it's kind of hard to think, or sort of, when are we going to get another classic promo? It seems so long since we've had a classic promo in WWE.
I was thinking this, when was the last time there was a promo? And the last one I can think of, this, and there might have been one since, but you know, the Miz talking smack promo on Daniel Bryan was a great, but then I don't even think that he was given a full script with that. I feel like the Miz was probably given, you know, bullet points of what he was going to say, but that didn't feel scripted, unless he's just really great at his job and made us believe that he wasn't. But yeah, you're right, we're not getting, you know, I watched Retro ITR this week, and it was the promo where the Godfather had come out as the Good Father.
Oh, right, yeah.
And he cuts this really great promo, because the story is, you've got this 2-year run where he's a pimp with hose on TV, and he's a massive babyface, and everybody cheers because he's got the hose with him. And he comes out as the Good Father, and he says, and they boo him because he's in the suit, the shirt and tie. And he said, oh, is that it? You know, the women aren't with me, so you don't show me any love. And he does this great promo about, you know, I realize, you know, I'm just, you know, this is morally wrong what I'm doing with these women, and I've seen the light, and da da da. And there's no way the Godfather was scripted for that promo. He was just told roughly what to say, and he did a really good job. And that's kind of what it needs to be for somebody to have a promo that is going to be memorable.
Yeah, definitely. Just a couple of, I mean, one thing, I think we talked about this last week, and I said, you know, I would like to see Brock Lesnar back on screen. Part of the reason for that is I'd like to see Paul Heyman back. And Heyman's promos, he obviously writes them for himself, and they are very different from everyone else's promos. So that's one person who has promos that are, because he writes them for himself, and I'm sure he will continue to do so, then his promos are very different from everyone else's. I think Drew McIntyre as well, to his credit, he's managed to squeeze some British slang or Scottish slang in there. So, you know, that there has distinguished his promos from the...
Edge has cut a couple of good ones as well.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. And I guess Randy Orton has also. I mean, he's been putting some, you know, his speeches, certainly the one he did prior to the Big Show match last week. I mean, there's some real gusto, you know, some real, you know, passion and, you know, zing in that. So that did feel a bit different. But again, it's not something that anyone's going to be talking about in 3 weeks' time. I mean, it's just not. So I think the fact, you know, they've obviously said to Drew, right, this is what we want you to say, and if you need to add some British slang to it, then go ahead. So it sounds more like what you might say. So I think actually it's important to just point that out. But on the whole, it's like exactly as John Moxley described it. Is all these people are backstage sitting there memorizing the scripts over and over and over again. And for some of them, it ends up being sounding over rehearsed and just not natural. And I think in order for it to really connect with the audience, then it needs to seem like it really is them, and that they are a real person, and that we can relate to them. And I think it's very difficult to relate to these, you know, artificial manufactured promos that are just, you know, not really relevant, or they're not really conducive to whatever storyline is going on or what they're attempting to do, or sometimes they're not. Or you know that they could be better. or that they could have, you know, more fire, more, you know, vitality to them, instead of being something that you're kind of been given here, say this and try and make the best of it. And too often it feels like, you know, that's the takeaway from that promo. Yeah, they've been given a prescriptive promo to say, and they've made the best of it. And that shouldn't be, you know, our reaction, should it? It should be, wow, you know, so-and-so's really into this coming feud, or really can't wait to get revenge on this person, or, you know, and I can't wait to see what happens in the ring. That's the sort of reaction, that's the emotion promos are supposed to trigger, isn't it, Kenny?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that was an interesting point that Moxley brought up, especially with what's going on. So, I mean, next week we'll probably have more to say about, you know, WWE's ratings and numbers and all that kind of stuff. But before we move on from ratings, Finn, I would be remiss if I did not bring this up. Last week, you know, or a couple of weeks ago, you obviously talked about AEW and some of the issues they've got going on. And then last week on the July 22nd AEW and NXTs, the ratings came in and it was a big win for AEW.
It was NXT. A pasting.
It was a pasting. They were number five top cable show of the night with 845,000 viewers. They won all the demos, some of them doubled. NXT was the 35th biggest show of the night with 615,000 viewers. So it was a big... Now, the thing that intrigued me more than the number itself, which is obviously a talking point for us to discuss, is that apparently NXT opened with 1 million viewers and within 10 minutes was down to 600,000.
Wow.
I think AEW peaked during the Young Bucks Butcher and the Blade False Count Anywhere match at 1 million viewers, or just over 1 million viewers, and they got it back up to about 900,000 at the end when they had the Sammy Guevara came back during the Inner Circle match. But what does this rating mean anything? Do you see WWE reacting in any way? Because this was kind of the biggest margin win for AEW in a long time.
Yeah, it absolutely was. I mean, you would hope that WWE is going to react to this. Is going to be looking at those numbers and saying, well, why did, you know, nearly 400,000, what, 300,000 plus people turn off our program after 10 minutes? I mean, if that isn't provoking some soul searching, I don't know what will. I mean, that there is just absolutely devastating, really. NXT needs to be looking at that and saying, well, where did we go wrong here? You know, when I was doing Power Slam, we had a bad month in terms of sales. You go through everything. You're like, where did we go wrong? And sometimes you couldn't quite work it out. Other times you could. But I mean, for me, always really strengthened my resolve to do better next issue. You know, that was something that I always did. And you got those numbers back and you're like, wow, you know, especially if you could look at an issue and say, well, yeah, we should have done this or we should have done that. There were times where you put an issue out and you're like, well, I actually thought that was a really good issue and it's done very poorly or sold very poorly by the standards of now. And that was frightening because then you would think to yourself, oh my God, you know, I'm losing it. You know, what do we need to do? You know, do we need to change direction? And that there could be very worrying. And, you know, if that then became a pattern, then you were in trouble. With NXT, yeah, they need to be reviewing why those numbers declined so steeply, so quickly. I'm hoping it's going to result in some action being taken because, you know, it does feel to me like NXT, a lot of it could be a lot better than it is. I mean, I know that's your sentiments as well, Kenny.
Yeah, I mean, even if you look at tonight, or, you know, you might be listening to this on Thursday morning, but the Wednesday, July 29th show, I've got the two cards up here of what's been announced. And on NXT, we've got Johnny Gargano against Roderick Strong, Keith Lee's on the show, Shotzi Blackheart against Mercedes Martinez, and a triple threat match with Dexter Lumis, Finn Balor, and Timothy Thatcher, with the winner going on to the North American title match at TakeOver. And then over on Dynamite, you've got Moxley and Darby Allin against Brian Cage and Ricky Starks. Omega and Page defend the tag titles against the Dark Order. Cody versus Warhorse. And then the 10-man tag with the Inner Circle against Orange Cassidy, Best Friends, Jungle Boy, and Luchasaurus. It feels, as in from somebody who watches both shows, that the AEW are probably going to win again tonight.
Yeah, I would think so, yeah.
Because there doesn't really seem to be anything on the NXT show that you're kind of going, I need to see that. You know, that's something you go, I can catch up with that later on. I can catch up with what's going on. But I mean, that's that, the problem is they've got NXT as partly a developmental show, and that's, I mean, you know, because Sandra, obviously, Sandra loves NXT, she always has, and, you know, we've had conversations about how the quality of NXT storytelling really seems to have dipped.
Yeah.
Since they went 2 hours and went to Wednesday nights, and, you know, they're starting to do a little bit of hotshot booking here and there, which is just something they never used to do, which is why it's so kind of glaring, you know, Keith Lee winning the title and then within 2 weeks, you know, the belt's off and there's no real explanation.
Yeah, I mean, there used to be a lot more weight and substance to the storylines there, and it felt like everyone had something to do and everything was going somewhere. And it was like the whole, you know, the old style territory building block booking where if a person won in the opening match, then next week or the week after, or the week after that, they would start moving up the ranks, and it would be a gradual thing. So you would watch someone's journey from, you know, zero to hero, which is, you know, why we watch wrestling, isn't it? It's the stories that draws in. I mean, the matches, obviously, if the matches are exciting, you know, that's a draw as well, but it's the characters and the stories that are the thing that keep us coming back for more. I've always been a big believer of that. I mean, obviously, when a match is tremendous between characters that are over in a story that matters, then, you know, that there is, you know, the perfect package. That's when you put the jigsaw together. But, you know, the booking is supposed to be there to complement everything. And especially if, you know, the talent actually aren't that good, then the booking is supposed to compensate for the talent's weaknesses. You know, so if somebody needs more assistance than someone else, then they should receive it. If someone doesn't really need it because they're already over and the, you know, the match is red hot, then, well, put your efforts into the people who need it so that everyone on the show serves a purpose and, you know, a segment isn't losing 300,000 viewers. I mean, that's what it's all about, isn't it? It's about keeping people for the duration, especially when you've got a 2-hour show. The whole thing's got to be good. It's not just based on a main event. It's all about, well, every segment on the show has a purpose to serve, and that is to retain viewers and to build to the next segment. So
yeah, and NXT used to also be about creating a lot of fun characters, and there doesn't seem to be as many of them.
Yeah, definitely not. It just feels to me like they're not really trying as hard as they should be. You know, that's what I'm getting from the entire WWE output at the moment. I just feel like it could be a lot better than it is. It's as if they're waiting around for something to happen, and they could be waiting around for a very long time before people are allowed back into arenas to watch shows, given the number of coronavirus cases in America. So I really think they need to just, you know, forget all that hanging around and, oh, well, you know, it just almost seems, oh, well, you know, tread water, or we're on hold, or we'll worry about it when the fans are back. They need to start doing it immediately. It's like, right now you've got a problem. Your numbers are going through the floor, and you need to do everything you can to try and reverse that trend. I don't understand why they're not doing that.
Yeah, I have seen people say, you know, online, whether it's our Facebook community or on your posts, Finn, or whatever, and I have seen a lot of people go, well, you know, do ratings really matter? I don't really watch wrestling for ratings. And that's a valid point, because a lot of fans don't watch it for ratings, nor should you watch for ratings. But I think the reason, and Finn, you can back me up here, I guess, if you feel the same, but I think the reason that we discuss it so much is because the ratings actually are a telltale sign for how well the promotion is doing, because if less people are watching each time, then what they're doing isn't hitting as much as it usually does. And if you look at WWE, I think at this time about 3 years ago, a Raw was doing about 4 million viewers, and now it's doing 1.6. I don't think that can just be blamed on, oh, well, you know, people have got Netflix. I don't think it's just as simple as that.
I mean, yeah, look at the numbers. July 13th, Raw, 1.56 million viewers, and that's the average over 3 hours. July 20th, 1.62 million viewers. July 27th this week, which we will discuss in a moment, I thought was a much better show, that did 1.61 million viewers. So, I mean, these numbers are miserable. And it's like, I understand that a lot of people aren't interested in ratings, but when your ratings are down, then your viewing figures are down. Obviously, fewer people are watching, so fewer people are going to be spending money on the product.
But also, I mean, the thing is, as much as we, you know, Asuka and Sasha Banks, that's a good match. When your big selling point is Dolph Ziggler and Drew McIntyre, you know, they're not. I remember years ago, maybe like 2013, 2014, and you'd go on Twitter during Raw, and there would be a lot of people from the UK up watching live. There would be a lot of people talking about it, tweeting about it, having a conversation, and it doesn't feel like people, it doesn't feel like that happens anywhere near as much as it used to. And I think that the BT Sport numbers have been coming in recently about, I think Raw's been doing about 40,000 views live. But I can't remember, but I think, you know, 5 years ago, it was probably doing at least double that, if not more. So it feels like it's just, there's not, even the people who are still watching it, it's like there's not an, it's not as sort of, what's the word? It's not as urgent for you to see live.
Yeah, they're not as enthusiastic about it, are they?
Yeah, they can catch it tomorrow or catch it on Wednesday. Yeah. They don't need to.
Or watch the highlights on YouTube. Oh, I can't be bothered watching the 3-hour show. I'd rather watch something else. And it's just like, well, if that is the way your long-time so-called die-hard fans feel about your product, then your product is not connecting with them. You know, it just isn't. And it's like ratings, of course, are of vital importance. Because if your ratings are down, then fewer people are interested. I can realize that's a case of stating the bleeding obvious. But it's just like people aren't but interested in the characters and the stories that you're telling. And that is devastating. I mean, I know they're all right because they've signed these deals and they've got like still, was it 3-year deals they signed? I think it was, wasn't it?
5-year.
Or 5-year deals. Okay. So, I mean, they're okay. They don't really need to worry about anything, in all honesty, in terms of losing TV deals for quite some time. But they absolutely should not become lazy and complacent about that. They need to react to this now and come up with something that's going to get people talking again. So they'll tell the friends or they'll post on social media, or did you see Raw this week? Oh, it was tremendous. This character's really exciting. This story's just going somewhere. I can't wait to see how it plays out. You've got to watch it. You know, it's that sort of response that they want from people.
And if you look at things like small things that are not getting a lot of play, and, you know, why would they be like Sky in Italy, I think, are now the second European country to drop WWE and pick up AEW. Instead, I think Germany did it as well. So I think Germany did it, now Italy have done it. And it's like, that's not a massive thing. But I think that the issue is that WWE is not pulling in what it used to. And it's not becoming, you know, we saw with Sky, it left Sky in the UK, went to BT Sport. It's like, people are not as kind of gung-ho that they have to have WWE. And that's a worrying thing, because Europe and the UK has always been, you know, one of their biggest markets. And
it was the number two market, wasn't it, after US and Canada.
And I don't think that's something to be complacent about, because I don't think that's a guarantee that you're always going to have that.
That's it. I mean, you cannot take your audience for granted, and that's what I feel like WWE is doing at the moment. They've had this attitude for many, many years. You came out with that quote from Triple H, and was it last week or the week before?
But the Marks, who, you know, you and your friend Mark will still be watching.
It's like, well, they aren't watching now, because, you know, this week you had an average of 1.61 million viewers. So you've lost, like, you know, you were over 3 million a few years ago. So there's a hell of a lot of people who just won't give you, they won't watch you on free TV. If they won't watch you on free TV, they're not going to pay to watch your, you know, to subscribe to your network. They're not going to buy the merchandise. When they can do, they're not going to buy a ticket to go and watch the show live, because the tickets are really expensive. They're not going to, you know, they're not going to buy the video game. They're not going to buy all these things and financially support this organization. And I know you're okay because you've got all this money coming in from TV, but it's like, in years to come, it's like you will have to renegotiate those TV contracts. And if you're drawing far fewer viewers than you were when you signed these deals, which you are based on current metrics, then you're not going to get the money that you did previously. It's not rocket science, is it? It's just common sense.
Well, I don't know if the next thing I'm about to bring up is common sense or not, but I need to get your take, Finn, about, apparently, PW Insider and Brian Alvarez and Sean Ross Sapp, a few people have reported that the plan as of right now is for SummerSlam to not take place at the Performance Center. They have announced that it's not going to be taking place in Boston at the TD Garden, as they were supposed to have their four nights or whatever. But Vince McMahon apparently wants to have SummerSlam at a different location, like a beach or on a boat or somewhere else. What do you think of this idea? Does SummerSlam need to feel different? Do you think if it is just in the PC, it could still feel special? How wacky is the idea from Vince that he wants to take this event somewhere else?
I don't know. I mean, even Donald Trump has cancelled, you know, the Republican National Convention. I mean, even he's cancelled his rallies. So even he's recognised that this is bad and that people cannot get together and congregate. You know, even he has realised that he has to take this seriously in terms of, you know, putting on events where, you know, people attend. So, I mean, what's WWE going to do? I think it would be, I don't really have any objections to them holding it somewhere else, so it feels different. I do understand why he would want to do that. I think he's probably he's suffering from performance center fatigue right now, Vince, as are all of us, Kenny, aren't we?
Every week.
So I do understand why he would want to present it from a different location, so it would seem and feel different, look different, and maybe would become a talking point, which it may not be if it's yet another event from the Performance Center. So I absolutely understand why he would want to do this, but is he going to be allowed to have fans in attendance? I don't think so.
It feels like the best chance he's got is if he did decide to do it. I mean, I don't know if you even would have the permit to do this, but like, if there was like a beach somewhere where you can spread people out and you can bring production in and do all that, but I don't know how easy or difficult that would be. If MD would pull it off, I believe he's the one that would do it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I guess the problem, of course, then is that you could have people trying to get in who don't have tickets, who are then outside and are congregating outside, and that could become a PR problem for him. And it's, if it's an event where you're inviting fans to attend, I mean, he's obviously going to need some people there. That's going to be a problem, isn't it? Because they don't want large numbers of people gathering right now, because that's what's spreading coronavirus. So, but I do understand why he would want to do this. Maybe not on a beach, maybe in like a, I don't know, maybe in a, I don't know. I'm not sure where he's going to do it, but I do understand why he wants to do this, why he's talking about doing this. So that SummerSlam is distinguishable from all the other events. So I do get it. I absolutely do get it. I just don't think he's going to be allowed to sell tickets to the event or allow spectators to watch the show. It'll have to be people who are under contract, the same people generally who are appearing in the behind the perspex of the events that take from the Performance Center. So, but I do understand it. Yeah, and I actually, to be honest with you, Kenny, I welcome the idea. Because we really do need something different right now from WWE. And when I say something different, I mean not another cinematic match, because they've kind of lost the way with those. And if they're going to go back to that, they need to get it right next time, because they're now becoming a bit of a chore, a bit of a liability, especially after the Swamp fight. I mean, I thought they did a good job with the bar fight between Sheamus and Jeff Hardy. I'm sure we'll talk about that shortly. And obviously, the really great thing about it was you knew that it drew a line under the feud and that we're not going to have to watch Hardy and Sheamus anymore, which is, you know, round of applause for that. But yeah, as far as holding the events outside the Performance Center, yeah, I'm all for that, but I'm not quite sure how they're going to pull it off.
Yeah, I'm the same. If they can do it safely and they can get something where there's some fans and there's some atmosphere, I'm all for it. It'd be great to see, you know, something resembling normality with whatever they can do.
I mean, we did see it when Liverpool won the Premier League, and they said, don't congregate, you know, and then loads of people got together in Liverpool and there was people everywhere. And it was just like, you know, if it's SummerSlam and it's an event where people might be able to sort of get a look and, you know, just hang around outside, that could be the eventuality. That could happen, couldn't it? You know, inadvertently, we've discouraged fans from attending. We've said don't come, but they might turn up anyway. And if there's lots of people gathering, then that's going to be a problem, and that could be a PR disaster, and they don't want that, really.
Lots of things to consider. I'm sure in the next week or two we will know what's happening, because, you know, you'd assume they would need to tell us, because August is in 3 days. before
That's
we talk,
it's only 3 weeks on Sunday, isn't it? SummerSlam.
Yeah, it's not far away at all. Before we talk about SmackDown and Raw, I do need to bring up the Pat McAfee show incident where Adam Cole was on the show. There was a heated exchange that included some swearing because Pat McAfee had been talking about wrestling being fake. And people were talking about, is this legit? Is it a work? And Triple H appeared in the Pat McAfee show to address the incident. And he apologized. Said, Pat, you're being Pat McAfee, a professional button pusher. That's what you do. You do it very well. And then he said, I don't know if Florida's in your plans anytime soon. I know you come down sometimes. So anytime you're around, come on the show. I'll promote your show. I'll promote you just like we've done before. So they seem to be setting something up. We're maybe not the audience that this is for, Finn, because, Pat McAfee, I was looking at his Twitter earlier today. I just want to pull up the numbers here. He has got 1.8 million Twitter followers. He seems to be quite big in football circles in America. He has got almost 1 million subscribers on YouTube. So is this worth doing? Is this something that can pull in some interest? What do you think?
Is he verified on YouTube, Kenny?
Well, I have to check that actually, because not just anybody gets verified, as you know, Finn. It takes a certain class of channel to get verified.
You sounded a bit like Sean Connery there, Kenny.
That's the first time I've ever been told that in my life. But Pat McAfee and Adam Cole, is that something that gets you going, gets you excited? What do you think?
That gets the blood, but not really. But as you say, it's like, is this aimed at Finn Martin and Kenny McIntosh? Not really. It's aimed at other people. It's designed to attract people who might not otherwise watch WWE or NXT. It's designed to encourage them to watch it. And right now, as we've been talking about for the last however many minutes, they need to do something to get some more eyeballs on the product. So, I watched the Adam Cole appearance. Simulated anger. It was just, how could anyone imagine that was genuine or real or legit or authentic? It was just like, as soon as Pat McAfee started, needling Adam Cole, Adam Cole's reaction just didn't feel genuine. And then he just completely flew off the handle. Oh, massive overreaction and starts yelling at him and storms off. And, I think he did feel like they were setting something up because Pat had mentioned that he'd had a ring erected in his back garden or his wherever it was where he was, and he'd gone in there and taken some bumps, and he was talking about how tough it is being a wrestler and all this sort of carry on, and then Adam Cole says, "Well, that doesn't qualify you to comment on how tough it is and how difficult it is to be a wrestler and how much it hurts," and it's just like any wrestler, if he wasn't working a storyline, would have actually, given that person some respect and would have, would have been some admiration there for this person actually acknowledging how painful it is just to fall down in the ring. So that was the immediate moment where anyone should have realized that there's no way this is real, because Adam Cole would have said, "Well, good on your part for actually giving it a try and for giving me enough respect to tell me that, yeah, it really hurts to fall down in a wrestling ring." So it was fairly obvious from that moment onwards that they were working an angle. So it does seem to me like this is going to lead to a match.
Yeah, this kind of remind for me, and we've obviously got American listeners who are probably just like wanting to grab me through the airwaves and shake me because maybe there's something I don't know. But this kind of falls under the Rob Gronkowski thing for me. I just don't care. It's not for me. Maybe this is something that is going to get a certain, sector of the audience online that are going to like it or going to be into it. I guess we'll see. When I watched it and I was watching, the segment, there was not 1% of me that thought, is this a work, is it not? Which I think is what you'd be hoping that you would be thinking as the viewer.
Really, it doesn't matter. One other thing that I noticed was that they weren't talking about pro wrestling being a work on the show, were they? This felt like it was part of the on-screen storyline. Do you notice that?
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just like, well, they're not going to start talking about pro wrestling being a work at any moment, and then they never did. And to me, as we've already said, this isn't for us. This is for people who might not currently be watching, who are fans of this Pat character. We've obviously seen him on NXT. He's a big fan. I think he's probably kind of giddy about getting involved. I think it's something that will be a big thing for him. And I think he will do everything he can to promote the match. I thought he did a good job here. I mean, the fact that some people thought that it could have been real, I mean, props to him for that. You know, the fact that some
people... He's a professional button pusher, Finn. That's his job.
You know, the fact that some people in July of 2020 could fall for something like this, it's like, well, that just shows you that this guy was taking this seriously, and Adam Cole was as well. And this could actually be really good for Adam Cole. You know, he's going to be... This is presumably going to attract an audience that doesn't currently watch NXT, which, as we said, is something that NXT and all of WWE needs right now. One would imagine that Adam Cole will go over in the end. And maybe this will be a big moment, a big turning, I don't know whether it'll be a turning point in Adam Cole's career, but it could be good for him in the long run. So I'm all for this as well.
I read a theory online which I actually think would make more sense. Like, I get what they're doing. Pat McAfee has obviously been with WWE in some capacity because he has kickoff shows and stuff for ages. But I think the bigger thing they could do, and I mean, they probably shouldn't do this until people are back in the buildings, but the bigger match that they probably should be presenting is Adam Cole versus Triple H. You know, they've never had Triple H be on an NXT takeover show and wrestle. And I think that eventually, if Triple H was to sort of come in and do a match and put somebody over, that is the key here. That is the key to this suggestion. There is no other option to it. If he was to do that, I think that would be huge for whoever that would be. I don't know if Adam Cole's the guy for that, but I think if NXT want a big thing, that's their big thing that they have at some point in their arsenal that they could pull out. I think it would be something that would get people talking.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think, you know, what's going down, some time back, I remember writing words to that effect, that this was something that, you know, Triple H could do, his greatest gift. I think actually it was the Undisputed Era out there when Adam Cole was still champ, and he was taking some pot shots at Triple H, and it did kind of feel like they were heading in that direction. And obviously that, you know, hasn't happened yet. But you would think that, yeah, Triple H would want to do that, and would want to do that actually more than once, because that to me would be his greatest gift to, you know, the people, you know, to whom he is a mentor. You know, he's there and he's like going in there and putting people over, and he's going to get over with the talent. He's going to get over with everyone really by returning to the ring in NXT. And doing something like that for a younger performer. And when that younger performer then migrates to Raw or SmackDown, that will be something that they come in with. You know, that'll be a huge feather in their cap. It's like, this is the guy that defeated Triple H at TakeOver, whatever. And that's something that immediately is going to stand them in good stead, and they're going to have respect. And I don't know whether the audience is really that different anymore now that NXT is obviously on USA. But obviously more people are watching Raw and SmackDown than are watching NXT. So I mean, it's all going to be something that can be used to promote someone when they make the move from NXT to Raw or SmackDown. So it's something that definitely needs to happen. You know, I don't know whether Vince would be on board with that one. But I mean, I think Triple H just needs to sort of sell it to him and say, well, this is the time is right for me to do this while I still can. You know, let's not overdo it. You know, let's make sure it's part of a storyline that's a long-running thing. And, you know, there should be a lot of... So it would have to be a lot of needling from whomever it is to Triple H to get him to actually have a match. This will be obviously his first match in NXT for him to do that. But I think as part of a storyline, it could be huge. You know, draw some really good numbers for the TV, really good numbers for TakeOver. Yeah, it seems like a no-brainer, Kenny, doesn't it, really?
It does. It feels like that's something that they should do. They should look into doing. And yeah, I do think it's probably something you need to wait till the crowd's back. But when that happens, I think it's definitely something they should look into. So let's move on to SmackDown and Raw. SmackDown is probably not as much to talk about as it is for Raw. But the big story coming out of SmackDown was... the injury of Kofi Kingston, which led to Kofi Kingston basically explaining to Big E that Woods and Big E would like... Woods and Kofi. Kofi, Why has my brain had a fart? Woods and Kofeet would like, and they're giving their blessing to Biggie going and having a solo run. He's always put the group ahead of himself. He's always been really selfless. They want him to have his time. This is the universe telling him that it's his time. And it was actually a really sweet moment. It felt very genuine. And, because the whole thing began with Biggie wanted them to get the titles back, and they want to get them back off Cesaro and Nakamura. But I thought this segment was really good, and I think that the Biggie solo run, for me, was the most exciting thing that came out of SmackDown.
Kofi Kingston said he was going to be out for 6 weeks, and Kofi urged Biggie to pursue his own career, and that both Kofi and Xavier Woods were, absolutely united in their support for Big E to become a solo act. I think we said it at the time last year that Kofi should have done this. He should have separated from New Day, got his own gear, different gear to New Day, changed his character. And I think he probably would have done better had he done so. Big E needs to do the same thing. They can't make that mistake again. If Big E's going to go solo, he can't be as Big E from the New Day. He needs to be Big E, a different character. It needs to be a lot of differences between how he is or how he was on SmackDown last week and when we see him next as a singles performer. Because otherwise, it would just feel like something he's just doing to kill a little bit of time until his partners are back. And I think that messaging is very important, Kenny. They absolutely need to study where they went wrong with Kofi and not repeat it with Big E. I don't know whether he can become the guy that some people think he can. I hope he can, but I don't know. We've never really seen it, have we? I mean, he's been around a long time now. He came in with Dolph and AJ Lee, didn't he? Was that 2011, I think it was? Or 2012?
I think he was with them. He was with them late 2012, early 2013. Because I remember him being with Dolph when Dolph won the night after WrestleMania 29.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. So I mean, he's been there a long time. So it's coming up 8 years, isn't it? If he's going to be ready for it, he's ready for it now. He's been there a long time. He's got to become a serious character as well. He can't be doing the Big E character that he's been playing for years. There's got to be a big change, I think, in order for us to take him seriously as a singles player. What do you think, Kenny?
Yeah, I agree. I think that the Kofi should be the experiment that we learn from. That, Kofi didn't develop as an act from where he was. Therefore, we need to see more. We need to see more from Big E. We need to see him being... And the thing is, because I think the worry that some people have is that you don't want him to lose what we love about him from the New Day, because you do want that atmosphere, that energy with him. And as an example, I don't know if you guys have seen it, but it's worth checking out. If you go on our YouTube channel, cheap plug, and look at the Big E interview that he did with KJ, he basically just takes the microphone and cuts this promo for 5 minutes. And it's the most charismatic thing you've ever seen. The guy has it. The guy has it in spades. The problem is just that he has been in this tag team. And I mean, New Day have done everything they can do.
Yeah.
What else can the New Day do? Because the other thing is, if WWE was a tag team territory or a tag team promotion, there's loads more they could do, but WWE isn't. So, they've actually done really well. I want to say New Day maybe debuted as the heel team late 2014, early 2015. I remember them being on the pre-show of the WrestleMania 31.
I think it was around about then, wasn't it? Because they really struggled at first, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. So let me find it. They debuted, the first vignette for them was July 2014.
Wow.
November the 3rd, 2014 was when the first vignette of the New Day came out, but it was more the gospel gimmick. But you're talking about 5 years of the New Day gimmick that we've known.
Yeah, that's nearly 6 years now, isn't it?
Yeah, nearly six. So that's a hell of an achievement that they've had. That it can't really be denied how successful they've been, how important they've been to black people and to be representation for people. They really have done a lot in wrestling that they should be commended for, I think. But I think now is the time for Big E to sort of progress and just add some more layers to the bow that he's got.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they've had, what was it, were they eight-time champs? I think it was eight-time tag team champs,
yes,
wasn't it? Eight-time tag. And, like, they were the team that were allowed to defeat, to surpass Demolition's record, weren't they? They were the team that finally did
that.
Yeah, they were.
Yeah, they were the team that surpassed Demolition.
I mean, it's like there isn't anything really left. I mean, there hasn't been anything left for them really to do for about a year or so. I mean, maybe longer, really. I mean, yeah, they should have split last year when Kofi won the title. And that was a huge mistake. It really was. I don't know whether Kofi would have made it, but I think he would have had a better chance had he been seen as his own man. If we were to, like, this is a guy that's, you know, that's a champ. He's a singles competitor. You know, he's not just, he's not like somebody who's like a transitional champion and, you know, he's holding on to the belt until someone better comes along. And then, of course, we saw what happened on the SmackDown episode last year when he lost to Brock Lesnar. And was it 9 seconds? I think it was 9 seconds, something outrageous, wasn't it? So, I mean, yeah, we'll see what happens with Big E. I mean, I think change the character. He's had a lot of great tag team matches. I haven't really seen him in that many singles matches, but I'm sure he's got the ability to do it. We just haven't seen it yet. So I'm hoping that they're going to really maybe keep him off TV for a couple more weeks, maybe have him debut with a new character at SummerSlam. That might not be a bad idea, Kenny.
Yeah, I think the key, though, should be that he is a babyface.
Yes, absolutely.
He definitely needs to keep that element to it. The difficulty is going to be how much do you want to keep what he had from the New Day, how much do you want to change? That's a difficult decision to strike that balance. But I think they need to do enough to sort of keep the New Day stuff that we like about him, but also add stuff that makes him feel he's elevated. So yeah. I hope they do that. Also on SmackDown, though, we did have the bar fight with Sheamus and Jeff Hardy, a brief appearance by a sort of light version of Willow at one point, and Jeff Hardy got the win. What did you make of the bar fight? As dear God, please let it be the blow off of this feud.
Yeah, I mean, I quite enjoyed it. I mean, it was an Irish Shannon's bar, and they had the mood music. Why is it they always have to fight into the toilets, Kenny? Why does this just happen? Oh, it's because Vince McMahon likes toilet humor. That's it.
Loves toilet humor.
So Sheamus said that Hardy was weak and pathetic and no one cared about him anymore and he fought all over the place. At one point, Sheamus placed Hardy's head in a urinal and flushed it, and then Hardy made a comeback and, of course, threw Sheamus into a cubicle. Hardy used a ladder. A guitar and a drum kit were destroyed. Jeeves, that's Sheamus' personal bartender, he got involved and Hardy blasted him through a table with a power bomb. Sheamus had Jeff down. He placed his hat over Jeff's face, then went and had a pint of Guinness, Kenny, wasn't it? Was it a pint of Guinness?
It was Guinness, I think, yeah. I think it was Guinness.
Came back, took the hat off Hardy's face and he had the makeup on and Sheamus was like stunned. Jeff made the comeback, ended up knocking Sheamus down, then climbed up the ladder and then hit a swanton from the ladder. It's quite funny how that was cut. You think to yourself, I think they may have brought a crash mat in at that point, because Sheamus was lying on the hard concrete floor. Hardy climbed up a high ladder. He wasn't going to be taking that swanton bump, you know, onto Sheamus lying on concrete floor.
I was thinking about it. I was going, surely to God he's not taking that. And I was, okay, thank God, crash mat.
Yeah, but if you look at the way it was obviously shot in a way that he could do that and not, you know, injure himself for no reason. He scored the 1-2-3 and that was it. So, I mean, I thought it was, let's face it, this feud has been so awful and anything really to blow this thing off receives a round of applause from me. So, I mean, I thought it was okay. I mean, yeah, I mean, I thought it was actually a good match. I enjoyed it. But the story behind it sort of made it hard to enjoy it as much as I want to. I think that's a fair comment.
Yeah, it felt like they were fighting upstream. They were having to... Yeah,
they were swimming upstream, weren't they?
Swimming upstream, yeah. For me, I was quite bored during it, but I think the reason is because they were doing good stuff, but they were doing good stuff that really was predicated on you believe in the feud or buying into the feud, of which I don't. So that was where I found difficulty. But they did work really hard. I couldn't, I'm sitting there going, what is he doing? Like what, they're doing all this stuff and it's like, it's not really for anything. I feel like, you know, you said something a couple of weeks ago and it's really stuck with me now. It's like, have cinematic matches just kind of, if we ran the well of what is good of cinematic matches, because now it just feels like we're doing them for the sake of them.
Yeah.
And they've not got as much, urgency to them.
Yeah, I mean, it's a shame that the storyline was just so loathsome, but hey, at least it's over with. You know, at least
it's over.
Benito, let's move on.
I do actually want to give props on SmackDown. I actually thought Naomi did a pretty good job on Miz TV of cutting a promo that kind of, you know, she talks about the fans being behind her and stuff. I thought she came across quite likable and quite relatable. So I thought she did a good job. I don't think the Seth Rollins 6 stars did as much for me as intended, but they were there. And you know, the bit with Lacey Evans coming out and Naomi smearing the lipstick in her face was quite funny. So
I actually think it was lip gloss. I thought it was lipstick. I mean, you know, we need Jen on to point, you know, we need someone to distinguish between the two. What do we know about these things?
We do. We absolutely do.
I mean, actually, I'm going to disagree with you there, Kenny. I mean, they brought it out, didn't they? Miz and Morrison brought Naomi out, mentioned that she was trending last week, you know, and Miz and Morrison, they you know, they're trendsetters. They know what's going on. You know, they've got the finger on the pulse. And so they introduced Naomi and they're kind of mocking her, you know, and she said she'd been showing up and showing out. I mean, to me, she didn't really say this should have been a big moment for her. I know it was supposed to be a big moment for her, and maybe in hindsight, it will be a big moment for her. I hope it is. We talked about Naomi last week, but she didn't really say a whole lot here on the stick to make me think that I should really be rooting for her and be urging WWE to, you know, pitting her against, you know, Bayley or Sasha Banks or whomever, you know.
Well, part of the problem is that they've tried to use this real life thing of the hashtag for her and tried to turn it into the story, but she doesn't actually have a story. So what is there for her to say?
You are absolutely right. So I mean, it was they tried to take this, you know, this, you know, Twitter hashtag, and Lacey Evans mentioned it. She referred to it as a pity hashtag that went viral. So, I mean, Lacey was out there. I mean, presumably, is she now a heel again, Kenny? It seems like she's turned.
Yeah, I think she has a heel. She has a heel now. So she's back to be, I mean, she's better as a heel. She works better that way.
Yeah, she is. But I mean, to me, you know, I just go back to what I said last week. If Naomi wants to be taken seriously, she needs to show us something that we haven't seen from her before. And I think if she has a match with Naomi and it's like a match that, you know, really sort of lingers in our mind's eye and is a match that we really look back on and say, you know what, that was a really good match. She came out and she showed us there. That could be the start of something, the start of a push that's, you know, meaningful and got some substance to it, and could lead to a title match. I mean, I'm not excited about the prospect of Naomi versus Bayley at the moment, because I'm not convinced that Naomi can really be, you know, a pay-per-view level opponent for Bayley. But I mean, it does seem like, you know, it does seem like that will happen. So I'm hoping she does get there. And I'm hoping she shows us a lot more, and that it's not just a pity hashtag that went viral. That she really does deserve this and that she really is up to the challenge.
That's really, I mean, I didn't really have anything else in SmackDown that stuck out to me. Is there anything else you wanted to mention before we move on to Raw?
I mean, I think we had, didn't we have an Alexa Bliss versus Nikki Cross match? I think we did, didn't we?
We did, yeah, to determine who was going to face Bayley.
Yeah, I thought that was well done. I mean, Alexa Bliss worked heel. Nikki Cross went into the match with storyline injured ribs, which she so well felt. I think Sasha Banks and Bayley were on commentary, weren't they? They were on commentary?
Yeah, they were in commentary for the match, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, I enjoyed that match. I thought that was Alexa's best performance in a long time. Not that that's really saying a whole lot. But, I mean, Alexa, it felt to me like she was sort of she was laying the groundwork for a heel turn. I think Bliss and Cross, that team, is about to, they are about to split. It's about to end. And that's the best thing for both of them, because I think they've gone as far as they can as a team. So they need to decide what they're going to do next. I mean, Alexa's kind of wasted as a babyface. She showed me a lot more here than she has in a long time against Nikki Cross. I mean, it was really good to see Nikki Cross win. And she's going to face Bayley again this week on SmackDown, isn't she?
Yeah, that's they're advertising that as, you know, they're trying to advertise big matches going into the TV shows now. So Bayley and Nikki is the one for this week, along with Grand Metalik, who won a four-way match to face AJ Styles. So there are two title matches they're promoting for Friday.
That's right. So, I mean, you know, Bayley had set this one up. She said that Nikki could have a rematch if she beat Alexa Bliss on the July 24th SmackDown, and she did precisely that. You know, Bliss congratulated Nikki Cross after the match and wished her well. I'm thinking maybe we're going to get a heel turn from Alexa on Friday. I'm not sure. Maybe. I think that would be a good thing for Alexa, who's just been coasting for so long. And it felt to me like she had something to prove here. And, you know, Alexa's one of those characters who I think when she's motivated, she's pretty good. And obviously the character is better than the in-ring. But I think if she turns heel again, I think she can become a more valuable player than she has been. So I enjoyed that. I guess the only other thing on the show would be Matt Riddle defeated Tony Nese. Actually, it was a bit of a scrappy match. Matt Riddle is usually so smooth. And it was as if these two were on different pages at times. I was kind of surprised by how rough this match was in spots. So Matt Riddle won. King Corbin came out afterwards and said that he's put a king's ransom on Matt Riddle. And that's going to go to, presumably, to anyone who can take out or injure Matt Riddle. So it's like the old bounty that they used to do years ago in the territories. So, I mean, it's hard to get excited about Matt Riddle versus King Corbin, but at least it was a storyline. At least it's something that's going to go somewhere. And also we had a Firefly Funhouse, and Bray Wyatt spoke to the lantern, the head that's turned into a lantern. And Bray said that he, as in the Fiend, had been unleashed, but not a whole lot else was said there. And I don't think we really got a Braun Strowman update, did we, Kenny?
No, it feels like they're waiting to tell us what's going to happen with that next week. And I wish I was more excited about it, but I can't say that I am. But I did actually think Raw this week was a far more exciting show and interesting show than SmackDown was by a mile. You know, we opened the show straight out the gate with Randy Orton doing this promo where he just out and out said he wants the WWE Championship. He wants it from Drew McIntyre. He wants it at SummerSlam. He talks about him, you know, a decade ago, talking about being the chosen one. And he just basically makes fun of Drew. It was a very short, concise promo. But this is, if you take away Edge and Lesnar and the part-timers, it does feel like Drew and Orton is the biggest match with full-timers that they have to do. So I'm glad that they're giving us a big match at SummerSlam.
Yeah, we've talked about this for, I know we talked about it last week. I think we talked about it prior to that as well. It did seem obvious that it was going to be Drew versus Randy Orton at SummerSlam. Yeah, I thought Orton did a really good job here. He was saying that, you know, Rock and Austin cannot hold a candle to his list of accomplishments and his longevity, which in a sense is true. As long as you don't talk about business accomplishments, you know, mainstream presence and all these other things and career earnings. I mean, in terms of sticking around and winning more titles, yes, Randy has exceeded Rock and Austin's accomplishments in those departments for sure. But I thought he seemed really energized here, and he has done now for several months. And as you said, He explicitly stated that he wanted Drew's title, wanted to become champion again. And I thought, yeah, it was concise. It was fast moving. It seemed like Randy was out there, you know, with a purpose, which was to state his business of how much of a star he was, what he's done, who he was, and what he wanted to do next. And then, you know, they moved on really swiftly to the Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler segment. Felt like the show had a lot more. It just felt like it was laid out at a much faster pace than previous episodes. Would you agree with that, Kenny?
Yeah, definitely. You knew they had to sell SummerSlam to us. That was what the idea was. So let's give them give people a couple of matches to look forward to. And Drew Norton was the one that we wanted. So straight out of the bat, we had that. And you know, even you know when Orton was leaving, we see Nia Jax come out, and she you know comes out and talks about how she wants to be Raw Women's Champion. Then Shayna Baszler comes out, and they just start fighting. And then we end up getting them having a match later on in the show, where it ends up in a double count out in 45 seconds, and they're just battering lumps out of each other. And I like the kind of urgency to this of like Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler are both out there battering each other because they want to be champion. So I like the idea of, you know, we didn't get an answer as to what's happening. Are we going to have, you know, a triple threat for the women's title at SummerSlam? Are we going to have a four-way? Are they even going to be involved? Because obviously the women's title picture plays out later on. But it felt like chaos that I was actually interested to see where they go with it. So that was a plus point for me.
Yeah, I agree. And it felt like there was, you know, a real drive here too, because Nia, we haven't seen her for quite a few weeks. You know, Shayna obviously disappeared for a while after defeating Natalya. And then it was like, and there was like all these reports, oh, Vince isn't really into Shayna. You know, he's not going to push her. And then she's back and she's getting pushed again, which I'm all for. And this feels like a, you know, big match between these two. And I think they both got a lot to prove in that match. I mean, I would rather that they weren't immediately booked into a title match with the Raw Women's Champion. I would rather that was like a three-way or four-way or something like that, or even just Nia and Shayna to determine the number one contender to the title. I think it's far better to have that as a story. So we've got a story rather than it just being, yes, these two have said, I want the title, and then they just get that match. That's not that, you know, that sort of booking is not really working right now. We need stories with a start, middle and end again. We need to see journeys. This is what we need. You know, this is what this company is lacking right now. So that's what I want to see from these two. I mean, I was all for the brawl they had. I was like thinking, why are these two having a match on Raw? And it was absolutely the right decision to me, in my opinion, for them to just go to a non-finish, big pull apart, absolutely the right thing to do. You don't give this match away on the first night. No way.
Then we had on the show the Street Profits were at ringside for a number one contendership match to see who faces them at SummerSlam for the tag titles. So we had involved in that the Viking Raiders, Ricochet and Cedric Alexander, and Andrade and Angel Garza. Street Profits were quite comically being the ring announcers for the match. And they made the right call because the winners were Andrade and Angel Garza. They're the most interesting team out of the three, and I think that this you know, and then Angel and Garza attack them after the match. So I think they set up a pretty good thing here with the heels taking on Street Profits. It's time to move away from the Viking Raiders and the Street Profits. So I thought this was the right call. What did you think?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, they set this up a few weeks ago where Andrade and Angel Garza were clearly being positioned as the Street Profits' next challengers. So I was pleased to see that they won this triple threat match to officially become number one contenders to the Raw Tag Team title. They stated here that they will face Street Profits at SummerSlam. Wouldn't surprise me if Andrade and Garza won the belts at SummerSlam. But I'm absolutely fine with that. I mean, I think Andrade and Garza, they kind of need a big win right now because they've been all over the place. They've really been meandering. It's like, well, you know, is this an act that we can take seriously or not? And some weeks we can take them seriously and other weeks we can't. So I think they need more consistency in the team. I thought the match did everything it was supposed to do. Garza convincingly pinned Cedric Alexander. And yes, as you know, it will be that match at SummerSlam. And lots happened in these first sort of one, two, three, four segments of the show. Really, they've got three matches already set up for SummerSlam in the first four segments of the show. So very productive start to Raw, I felt, Kenny.
Yeah, very productive indeed. It was a great start with those two title matches. And they both felt matches you want to see. So that was good. We also got on the show Seth Rollins doing a promo where he basically calls it Dominic Mysterio. He says that, you know, he's there to help. And then as he tries to basically kind of, you know, bring him into the fold, Dominic attacks him. Then we've got Murphy and Rollins beating up Dominic, Aleister Black comes out for the save, and then as they're beating up Aleister Black and putting his eye through the steel steps, Dominic comes back with a kendo stick and just cleans house with Rollins and Murphy. It was very hot and fiery and exciting, and I don't know if we're leading to Dominic Mysterio versus Seth Rollins or if we're leading to Rey and Dominic against Rollins and Murphy, but I thought this was a great segment, and I don't know if I'm in the minority here, but I'm kind of glad Aleister Black's been taken out of the equation because I just don't think he's that interesting.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. I mean, I thought Dominic took a hell of a beating here, and I was just thinking to myself, we don't see that very often on Raw where we can really believe that someone is being beaten up. And, I mean, it sounds awful, but, I mean, you need that in wrestling. I mean, that's how you get heat, isn't it? That's how we are supposed to be as fans enraged. That is how we as fans are supposed to be backing the babyface to get revenge against the villains.
Old school.
Oh, absolutely old school. Obviously, they've done a number on Rey Mysterio, but I mean, at that all high for an eye business, we talked about it last week and I was thinking, would I have said anything different? Probably would have done, but I still can't take it seriously. I just couldn't take that match seriously. So this, to me, was a hell of a lot better than anything that happened between Rollins and Rey Mysterio at the Extreme Rules pay-per-view. So, yeah, I mean, Rollins is out there saying he didn't want to hurt anyone, you know, with his strange character. Still doesn't have that brooding intensity that I think it needs in order for it to become anything more than it already is. I mean, we know Seth Rollins is a really good in-ring performer, but there's like huge void missing in the character. And he's just, to me, still not bringing it. But I mean, yeah, Dominic came out. They absolutely blasted him. Aleister Black ran out for save. And for the second week running, he was completely destroyed by Seth Rollins. I mean, that's a bad two-week run for Aleister Black. Feels like they've just given up on that guy, doesn't it?
I mean,
he was out there on Raw last week, you know, trying to avenge, you know, the injury that Rollins had inflicted upon Rey Mysterio. And Black ended up losing to Rollins last week on Raw, didn't he?
I don't know what the... Because, you know, we heard at the beginning of the year that Aleister Black was one of the two choices, along with Drew McIntyre, to face Brock Lesnar. I mean, I just can't imagine being in a world where Aleister Black was the guy facing Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania.
No, same here.
The thing for Aleister Black is that, like, I like the aesthetic of him, and I like the look, and I like the idea of him, but all of the kind of substance that I'm seeing doesn't back up what the cool factor was. You know, he just doesn't seem like he... He's, you know, when he cuts promos, I kind of find myself zoning out. He's a good wrestler, but I just, there's just something about him I just can't get into. I don't know what it is.
I think he's all wrong for WWE. I just think he's never going to be a good fit in this company.
Yeah, he's not the guy who should be like, you know, not that he wouldn't do it, but like he's not the guy that you send to like PR firms and be like, hey, here's Aleister Black, listen to KSM. You know, it's like he's not that guy. He's this grunge, you know, underground tattooed guy who's a weirdo. Like, you're right, it just doesn't really fit.
It doesn't fit at all. I think he would be far better off in another company. You know, and it does seem to me, I mean, he was one of the guys that Vince, when they brought that crew of people up, was it January of last year? I think it was January, wasn't it? When a bunch of them were brought up.
It was,
and
yeah.
He was one of the few that actually wasn't buried, you know, in that group of NXTers who were promoted to the main roster. But it does seem to me now that Vince has lost interest in him, because that loss last week on Raw was pretty devastating for a babyface to come out to try and avenge what happened to Rey Mysterio and then lose. I mean, that does not happen to someone who the company views as a top babyface, someone with a big, bright future in this company. And this here, I mean, he was beaten down again. And then Rollins is demanding that Murphy rams Black's eye into the edge of the ring steps. And Murphy was kind of about to do something. His head was really close to the steps. And it was Dom Mysterio who ended up making the save with a kendo stick. And he was absolutely nailing him. So, I mean, it does, yeah, obviously something's going to happen at SummerSlam between Dominic Mysterio and Rollins and Murphy. Doesn't seem like Black is going to be a member of that team. I don't know whether Rey Mysterio is going to be part of that match. I think he really needs to be. He's going to have to make a miraculous recovery, isn't he, Kenny?
Well, it appears they, on top of a miraculous recovery, there might need to be a few dollars added to a contract for Rey Mysterio to come and do this. I think, I mean, the fact that Dominic was on this show, I think, indicates that Rey is going to resign. I just can't see them continuing with this story if he's not. And look, I mean, his son's getting to be in angles with Seth Rollins and be put over very hard on the show. Dominic is made to feel like a big deal and a big you know, project. So I think that I think that's going to be why he resigns, not for his own stuff. But and see if we do get Rey with his miraculous recovery and Dominic against Rollins and Murphy, that's a pretty exciting SummerSlam match. Could be good.
I agree. And it was, as you say, it was Dom Mysterio who was there making the save and causing the heels, Rollins and Murphy, to flee. So, I mean, you know, Dominic Mysterio was the guy who was the star here and who the emphasis and the spotlight was on afterwards. So, yeah, it's a big spot for him. And I think he's going to do all right. But, yeah, it needs to be a tag match. I don't think they'd put him in a singles match with Rollins yet. And I don't think they should do yet either. He's not ready for that. I think that would be premature for them to do that.
You don't want to show all those weaknesses off at this point. I also thought on Raw that Lashley and Mustafa Ali had a really good match. I really liked that match that they had. It was quite competitive. I couldn't really tell who was going to win it. And in the end, when Lashley did win, it didn't feel like he won by sort of jobbing out Ali. It felt like a good competitive match. So I'm hopeful that Ali's not just going to become part of the Cedric and Ricochet gang.
Well, I hope so as well. I mean, he was invited, wasn't he, by MVP to join the Hurt Business?
Because, MVP is the CEO of the Hurt Business.
That's right, yeah. And when he refused, that led to the match with Lashley. The Ninjas turned up during this match. They were completely beaten down by Lashley and others. And then...
idea is this ninja thing? It's just dire.
I mean, that just needs to... We don't need an explanation. It just needs to be just cancelled.
You always talk about that thing, Finn, where you're like, you know, imagine watching that with someone having to explain that this is what you watch.
Yeah.
The Ninjas.
You just sat there embarrassed. It's like, you know, don't do this. Don't do this to us. You've run enough people off as it is WWE, you know? Don't deter any more people from watching. But, I mean, yeah, I'm hoping for Ali as well. I mean, he had that really good performance last week. It was six man last week, wasn't it?
The six man.
That six man. And then he lost to Lashley. I mean, I didn't really want to see him lose by submission to Lashley, but I mean, I guess given the size difference, it doesn't really matter. So long as this is part of a storyline that hopefully will result in Ali joining MVP, Lashley, and Shelton Benjamin. I mean, I think that's the destination. That's the route I want for Ali. Not to just go back, as you say, becoming this sort of second match babyface. He's really talented and all that, but has never really gone beyond that point. And I think if he joins up with MVP and the crew, then there could be a brighter future for him as a heel, as part of that act. Have we seen Ali play heel yet in WWE?
No, we've not. He's been babyface the whole
thing. We've certainly never seen it on this magnitude. So. Yeah, I hope it's part of a storyline I hope that's not the end of it. You know, it would be terrible if they brought him back, gave him that win, and then jobbed him out to had Lashley defeated him here, beat him here, and then he went no further. That would be a real shame.
Yeah, for sure. And we also on Raw had the rematch of Ziggler and McIntyre. Drew picked the Extreme Rules stipulation, like Ziggler had at the pay-per-view. And they had this kind of 14-minute match. It was well wrestled. I didn't really think that it needed 14 and a half minutes for Drew to beat Dolph Ziggler, but there we are. I'm just kind of, I mean, the most exciting part of it was Orton coming out afterwards and doing the RKO out of nowhere. You know, Drew also cut a pre-match promo where he said, you know, you'll see the Claymore kick coming, and they're already starting to kind of sass each other in promos. So I think that the memory will be Drew and Orton, not that it took him 14 minutes to beat Dolph Ziggler.
Yeah, absolutely. I enjoyed the match. I mean, it's just like, again, it was like fairly obvious who was going to win, especially with the stipulation being, I mean, Drew got to choose the stipulation and it was the same as the Extreme Rules, except Drew could also, it was also no rules for Drew. So he was allowed to use chairs and just do all the things that you're allowed to do in Extreme Rules match, which he was forbidden from doing in, at Extreme Rules. So, it, you know, it was a slightly different match to Extreme Rules pay-per-view, but it just meant that it was even less likely that Dolph was going to win. So that was the drawback to it. You know, in hour three of Raw ended up drawing 1.463 million viewers, which is pretty miserable.
Not ideal.
I mean, yeah, you know, yeah, enjoyable match. And as you say, the lasting memory was Randy Orton running in afterwards, hitting the RKO from out of nowhere. And then he pulls with the WWE title belt. So the message is clear. Randy wants the championship. He'd said that at the start of the show. So it was kind of two bookends, really. It was, you know, it was the Randy show, wasn't it? He was there. I want the title. You know, I'm challenging Drew McIntyre. At the end of the show, he's there, hits Drew with the RKO, poses with a belt, and yes, that's where we're going. So we'll see if there's more interest in this next week. I mean, the thing is, one thing that needs to be pointed out is that this was a much better Raw than we've seen in recent weeks, but it's going to take a little bit of time for those people to come back, even if the quality has improved.
Yeah, I mean, I think the stuff has been good, but none of the stuff on the show has been good enough that you would phone your friend who used to watch wrestling and say, you need to watch this. It's not that good. And I think it needs to start getting that good again. I mean, I do want to ask you, obviously, but the biggest story at the show was the Asuka Sasha Banks Raw Women's title match, which coincided with the last appearance of Kairi Sane, who has now left the promotion. She's going back to Japan to live with her husband. Very controversial finish where Kairi had chased off Bayley, so that it was one-on-one. And as Asuka kind of had the match won, putting in the Asuka lock or beginning to, on the big screen, we see Bayley beating up Kairi. Asuka's kind of doesn't know what to do. And eventually Kairi shouts out for help from Asuka. And Asuka limps to the back while Sasha's unconscious. The referee counts Asuka out. And of course, as per the stipulation, the title can be won on pinfall, submission, disqualification, or countout. So Sasha Banks won the title from Asuka on a countout. This has been a very controversial finish. Some people love it, some people hate it, some people are in the middle. How did you feel about it? Is this a good way to progress the story? Is this a cheap finish? Where do you sit on it?
Why have people complained about this?
I think the criticism has been that it was, you know, the titles changing hands on a count out. I think the Raw Women's title since Asuka has won it, I think all of the, somebody put, I think all the defenses on pay-per-view have been non-finishes or count outs or DQs or, there's been a lot of non-finishes with that belt.
Okay. And
the idea that at the end here with this big, big match that it was a count out title change was just a bone of contention for some people who just didn't like it.
I don't really have a problem with it because, you know, this is not the end of the story. If this was the final match of the feud, then yes, I would have a problem with the way in which this ended, but it isn't. This is obviously going to continue. And I mean, I think it did, the rules, they did work them into the match very well. I mean, at one point, Banks got the title belt and threw it to Asuka as the referee was distracted. And then she sold it as if she'd been nailed with the belt, which was straight out of the Eddie Guerrero lie, cheat and steal manual, wasn't it? So I thought that was a nice tribute by Banks to Eddie Guerrero there. Asuka kicked out the frog splash. You know, as you say, Asuka was in charge at the end. And then we were shown Bayley backstage beating down Kairi and slamming her head on the on like a garage door, and which, you know, great, made tons of noise. And I thought that was kind of well done. And then Kairi's there, you know, helping Asuka's conflicted. You know, does she abandon the match and go and save a friend? You know, does she stay and win the title? It's like, as a babyface, of course she had to abandon the match and go and rescue her, you know, buddy from this attack by Bayley. And so she ran backstage, and then Bayley fled. And meanwhile, the referee counted Asuka out. So Sasha became the champion. It was the disputed decision and the Extreme Rules. So this was just clearing that up. So no more controversy. Sasha Banks is the Raw Women's Champion. And Bayley came back and celebrated with her. So, you know, I don't have a problem with it at all, Kenny. I mean, to me, it was like, well, it protects Asuka on the finish. They obviously wanted to make Sasha champ, and I think that's the right decision as well for the Bayley and Sasha act, who have got all the women's title belts right now. So I think that's really good for them. And they were already hot anyway. I mean, I know the TV ratings kind of don't reflect that, but I mean, they were doing really well, we said, this week after week. So I mean, it just fortifies them too as an act and their story. And I think also as well, you know, motivates Asuka to, you know, demand a rematch with Sasha, so, and to regain the belt, you know, in, you know, honor of Kairi or whatever. I mean, she's been wronged in this situation. She did the right thing by saving her friend, and that cost her. And I think that really buds well towards her as a character. We can respect that as fans. You know, that's what a babyface character should do. You know, she sacrificed her own career or her own, you know, her own glory to save a friend from a heel. So that's what she should have done. I really enjoyed it. I thought the match played out very well. And I thought they made Sasha Chan while protecting Asuka. I don't have any problem with it. Oh, why do people have a problem with this match, Kenny? I don't get it.
I mean, I can understand why people didn't like it, because it is another cheap finish after the cheap finish at the pay-per-view as well. I think doing both, I do get it. It worked for me in the sense of, at the end of it, especially in the promo afterwards, when, you know, Kairi's hurt and Asuka's just kind of screaming because she's so, you know, not angry and vengeful.
Yeah.
That does make me want to see Asuka destroy Sasha Banks. So in that sense, it has done what I think the story needed to do for me to be invested the way that it is. I think that for me, the thing that was a little bit underwhelming was, Kairi Sane was not being beat up that badly. It was a fairly paint by numbers, just, you know, kind of getting kicked. You know, It wasn't. I would have liked to have seen, when we cut back there, like, you know, Kairi has blood coming out of her mouth. She's been destroyed. That to me would have made it. That's my only thing that I was a bit like, you could have made that look a bit more brutal. And, you know, the compliment to Asuka is that I think that finish was very difficult to do and not have your baby face seem like an idiot. But she was doing it for friendship. You know, she was doing it for her best friend. And I think that played into it and actually made you sympathize with Asuka. So in that sense, it did work for me. And I hope that we are going to get Asuka and Sasha at SummerSlam, or I don't know what variation we're going to get, maybe involving Shayna or Nia or both. But I'm still as interested in the women's division on Raw as I was before, if not more so. So that kind of tells you it did the job for me.
Yeah, I mean, to me, if you want to put the belt on Sasha, then you don't want to beat Asuka. You don't want to have Sasha winning clean. It had to be a screwy finish. It just had to be, because, and you wanted a finish that's going to set up a rematch, presumably at SummerSlam, where I would imagine that Asuka will regain the title. Maybe that'll be another stipulation match. I'm not sure, but maybe it'll just be a straight match. I don't know. But I'm sure Asuka at the end of this is going to dethrone Sasha Banks. I'm convinced of that. So to me, yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed it. I am with you there on the, now you mentioned it on the Kairi Sane thing. It could have looked more serious for her. Maybe you could have just gone to a shot of Nia Jax. That would have been lovely, would have done it, wouldn't it? Nia Jax just entering the overlap. Well, I've got to ask her, get out there and save her. You know, that would have been actually quite a funny in-joke, wouldn't it? So Nia Jax just entered the room, you know, and just looked at Bailey beating down Kairi Sane. That probably would have legitimised it more had it looked like Kairi was taking a worse beating than she was. But I mean, you know, that to me, that's nitpicking, that's splitting hairs. And all right, I do that all the time. But I mean, to me, it's I was happy with it. I thought it was well done. I enjoyed the match. I thought the finish was rather played out really well. And it gave me the outcome I wanted for this story that they are continuing to tell, which of course is Sasha and Bayley now officially hold all the belts, all the gold.
And somebody made a good point on social media, I think yesterday, where they said, you know, they never got to really tell the story they intended to do with, you know, the two-man power trip of Austin and Triple H, because Triple H got injured.
Yeah.
So this is a version of that they can now tell the story. They can tell, you know, well, not the same thing, but they can tell a version of that story. You know, the double champions. It's been WWE's best story this year. So it's best to keep the belts focused in that environment. So
I don't have anything to add to what I've said. I mean, I'm all for it. Stop complaining, everyone. You know, we're the ones who do the complaining on this podcast.
We do enough complaining.
I'm not complaining.
Well, listen, that is it for us, though. We have obviously covered everything here. We'll try and do maybe a Q&A next week, either on the main podcast or on the Overrun. If any of you get any plugs for us?
No, I already mentioned the Pod of Thunder thing, so nothing else.
Well, as always, you can go over to Patreon, where really that does make the difference. If you are able to pledge some money to us over there, we give you this podcast a day early. We give you an Overrun where we talk about old issues of Power Slam. Finn does written articles over there. We do pay-per-view reviews, retro pay-per-view reviews. The most content you will get for pledging money to somebody on Patreon, you get from us. So if you are able to, we would really appreciate you helping us out. And also YouTube.com/InsideTheRopes. We've always got new content going up there. We're going to have a couple of new videos out this week. One should be going out tonight. So YouTube.com/InsideTheRopes. Well, Finn, I hope that you enjoy
it. Is the YouTube channel, is it not verified now?
It is now officially verified. So you're supposed to be verified when you hit 100,000 subscribers. So I had emailed them in January, sort of saying, hey, we don't seem to be verified yet. Can you let us know what's happening? And the response to my January 12th email was yesterday. So there you go. It must be hard in California to.
It must be. Yeah.
But look, we're verified now. We've got the tech. That's all that matters. So
that's all that matters. I did actually dangle that carrot earlier, Kenny. I was waiting to mention it. And you didn't pick up on it. So I'm glad it's been mentioned now.
No. Well, you know. The good verified channels are the ones you should check out, like ours at Inside the Ropes. Finn, I hope you enjoy the rest of your week, whatever you're getting up to. I'm sure there's DIY and pints involved and all that stuff.
Yeah, all that type of thing, all that good stuff. So, and you as well, Kenny. Hope you have a good rest of the week.
I will do my best. Thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you soon. If I be tonight, if I'm sad tonight.